Good evening. We're coming to the end. And I can remind you that we didn't read the first section. So we have the option of going back and reading the first section, which is about posture, breath. It's about 9 chapters, I think. Posture, breathing, control, mind waves, mind weaves, bowing. So one of Dan's suggestions is that we do the Fukan Zazengi, which is Dogen's talk about Zazen. It's about 2.5 pages long. It's very short, but it's got a lot in it. So if we wanted to go in that direction and entertain the subject of Zazen, there's a great deal of material about it. In a way, it's a little absurd since it's really completely untalkaboutable, the experience itself, and yet. It's also very helpful to bring ourselves into accord with the thinking about it. So, the subject tonight is very short also. It's just 2 of these little pages. And then after that is an epilogue, which is longer. So we have 2 nights, tonight and next week, to entertain ourselves with this book, and then we need to figure out what to do next.
I had a couple thoughts also. Maybe our next, I'm sure the people do too.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do this now. And well, we should figure something out before we completely finish, though, shouldn't we? What do you think? Afterwards, okay. All right.
Time suggestion?
Yes.
Were you planning on doing Buddha's Enlightenment and the epilogue tonight?
No.
So maybe if we do the two-sided chapter, the two pages, you know, in high gear, and give a little bit of time to chat about ideas so maybe people can go away and come back?
All right. Since it's so short, it'd be easy to do that. All right, let's do it.
Buddha's Enlightenment. If you take pride in your attainment or become discouraged because of your idealistic effort, your practice will confine you by a thick wall. I'm very glad to be here on the day Buddha attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree. When he attained enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, he said, "It is wonderful to see Buddha nature in everything and in each individual." What he meant was that when we practice Zazen, we have Buddha nature, and each of us is Buddha himself. By practice, he did not mean just to sit under the Bodhi tree, or to sit in the cross-legged posture. It is true that this posture is the basic one or original way for us, but actually what Buddha meant was that mountains, trees, flowing water, flowers and plants, everything as it is the way Buddha is. It means everything is taking Buddha's activity, each thing in its own way.
But the way each thing exists is not to be understood by itself in its own realm of consciousness. What we see or what we hear is just a part, or a limited idea, of what we actually are. But when we just are, each just existing in his own way, we are expressing Buddha himself. In other words, when we practice something such as Zazen, then there is Buddha's way or Buddha nature. When we ask what Buddha nature is, it vanishes. But when we just practice Zazen, we have full understanding of it. The only way to understand Buddha nature is just to practice Zazen, just to be here as we are. So what Buddha meant by Buddha nature was to be there as he was, beyond the realm of consciousness.
Buddha nature is our original nature. We have it before we practice Zazen and before we acknowledge it in terms of consciousness. In this sense, whatever we do is Buddha's activity. If you want to understand it, you cannot understand it. When you give up trying to understand it, true understanding is always there. Usually after Zazen, I give a talk. But the reason people come is not just to listen to my talk, but to practice Zazen. You should never forget this point. The reason I talk is to encourage you to practice Zazen and Buddha's way. So we say that although you have Buddha nature, if you are under the idea of doing or not doing Zazen, or if you cannot admit that you are Buddha, then you understand neither Buddha nature nor Zazen. But when you practice Zazen in the same way as Buddha did, you will understand what our way is. We do not talk so much, but through our activity, we communicate with each other, intentionally or unintentionally. We should always be alert enough to communicate with or without words. If this point is lost, we will lose the most important point of Buddhism.
Wherever we go, we should not lose this way of life. This is called being Buddha, or being the boss. Wherever you go, you should be the master of your surroundings. This means you should not lose your way. So this is called Buddha, because if you exist in this way always, you are Buddha himself. Without trying to be Buddha, you are Buddha. This is how we attain enlightenment. To attain enlightenment is to be always with Buddha. By repeating the same thing over and over, we will acquire this kind of understanding. But if you lose this point and take pride in your attainment, or become discouraged because of your idealistic effort, your practice will confine you by a thick wall. We should not confine ourselves by a thick wall. So when Zazen time comes, just to get up, to go and sit with your teacher, and to talk to him and to listen to him, and then go home again, all these procedures are our practice. In this way, without any idea of attainment, you are always Buddha. This is true practice of Zazen. Then you may understand the true meaning of Buddha's first statement. See Buddha nature in various beings and in every one of us.
All beings are enlightened with me, Buddha said on his so-called enlightenment. It seems like something happened to him. But it's that he just dropped that impediment, that wall, the self-clinging. And once the self drops off, then everything becomes apparent. Body and mind drop off, that's what Dogen called it. It sounds like we're going to get something or attain something or all will be clear and final and perfect in some way. It isn't about perfection. He left a poem, or he said a poem, shortly after his enlightenment, saying, "Builder of the house, I see you now, and I won't allow you to build anymore." Building the house of self. We're constantly constructing that house of self. And we feel like we're hiding in it, but actually we're hiding from ourselves. We're hiding from our the Buddha nature of us that is our life. That's why Zazen itself is so important, because when we sit, slowly we erode our sense of self. We have to see how it, what a construction it is. We can see how we cling to it, try to make something of ourself. Kopen said it's always, practice is always about coming down and not coming down as attainment. Oh, now I'm coming down, so now I've really got something. It's not like that either. It's so, so plain and simple. When we drop our self-concern, we become Buddha's world. The whole world becomes sacred. Sometimes Kobin would tease us and say to somebody, have you seen Buddha yet? So this is a very sweet way to end the serious part of it. Though it's not the end, the epilogue is a very fine piece too. Are there questions? There yet? Helen?
I've always been really intrigued with the story of Buddha touching the earth and seeing them. And enlightened with everyone, awake with everyone. This was after he sat for 7 days under the Bodhi tree. This is after Mara did her thing with Sinibuddhi to try to distract him.
Mm-hmm. To persuade him not to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I've actually been looking for a very specific story. I have.
It's in Nana Mollie.
That's what I thought. So, what did he do? Then he got up, and that's when he had drank the milk and he told.
No. You know,
that was his first sit, right?
He was a yogi, mm-hmm. and was starving himself to death, trying to transcend the body and be completely pure and in the heavenly realm. And he'd been doing this for 6 years and finally decided that it was too much because he was almost dead. And a girl walked by carrying milk, and offered him some, and he accepted it. And he washed himself in the river. And in doing those two things, he totally alienated himself from his buddies. There were three men who were practicing with him, and they thought he had just gone crazy and were very annoyed with him and left him. And then he sat down and sat for 7 days. Some people say 7 weeks. Some people say he sat under a different tree each day or each week, and they will tell you which trees they were in Bodh Gaya. And then during that sitting is when Mara came and came over and over again, offering him every kind of excuse not to do what he was doing, when what he was doing was facing Mara. So basically, and what Mara offered was power, ego, in every guise, money, kingship, king of the world, as much sex and food as he could possibly have for the whole rest of his life, forever, everlasting life, rest. I just read somewhere that Mara came in the shape of a big white snake and said, "Why are you sitting up like that? Why don't you lie down where it's cool and wiggle around like I do? It's so restful down here." You can just imagine his mind saying, "Ooh, yes, ooh." So all those many things. And he was wrestling with his own mind. And allowing himself to see it and let it be what it was, rather than trying to control it and maintain some sort of more perfect self-image for himself. He just let himself be himself as Mara challenged him over and over. And finally, he bested Mara. And the way he bested Mara was to say, when Mara's last possible challenge to him was, "What makes you think you have the right to do this?" And Buddha touched the ground and he said, "The earth is my witness that I have the right to do it." And there was a great boom of thunder, and Indra spoke, and everything was very impressed about it. And then Buddha looked up into the heavens where Venus was shining, very, very bright. And he saw it. He saw the sky and the stars. And that's when he said, "All beings are enlightened with me. All of this is it." And then he worked it all out. You know, then he had to work out the Four Noble Truths. So that took him a while too, figuring out how the mind works. What is this suffering that I've been putting myself through? And that was part of the whole process as well. So he worked out the Four Noble Truths, and then he worked out the conditioned arising as well, that wheel of ignorance all the way through to old age and death, seeing how it worked. One thing caused another thing caused another thing. It was very scientific in a way.
So the Four Noble Truths came after his experience with seeing the sky?
I'm not sure. It's not clear in the story. As I remember it, it doesn't say in time. You know, the Indian culture has very little to do with time, which is why it's so wonderful to go there, because you feel this huge expansion of space as well as time, because it's not considered in the same way as our our very methodical way. So I don't know how it came exactly, but it was a part of that process. So that when he went to find his friends, and they, when they saw him, said, "Oh, we're not even going to talk to him. Let's just pretend we don't see him." But then they looked at him, and he looked so radiant, so. They had to welcome him and help him sit down and bathe his feet and take care of him and give him something to eat and ask him what had happened. And then he told them the Four Noble Truths, told them the causation, the whole wheel of causation.
The turning of the wheel.
That was the first turning of the wheel.
Not yeah.
Yes. And they say they had to persuade him to share. He said nobody would understand this. And then Indra, the god, came down to him and said, "Come on. There must be a couple of people out there who would get it." And he decided that he would be willing to go. And he spent the next, 40 years walking around, sitting with people, eating with people, talking. He met with kings, beggars, whores, courtesans, shepherds, every kind of person. Thank you for your question.
Look in the Mara chapter, not the Hind chapter, the last chapter. Thank you.
Did you have something?
No.
Well, it seems very long ago and far away. It's over 2,000 years. And if you think about how the world was then, it seems so very remote. Strangely, if you go back there, at least I could feel it. I wasn't expecting to feel anything at all. I had a very bad attitude when I was practicing early on, and I thought whatever we were doing in the present moment was the most important thing, and I just wasn't going to entertain the history and all the stories. I thought that was very secondary. And I only went to India because my husband wanted me to come with him. He was the one who wanted to go. And it wasn't, I mean, we went to Delhi and we went several other places before we went to Varanasi. And Varanasi was an amazing place, but not a very Buddha place. It is absolutely incredible. But right outside of Varanasi is Deer Park, where the turning of the wheel happened. And it's a big park now, beautiful. Green grass with old crumbling walls, which were the monasteries, the first monasteries that were built there. Very peaceful place with stupa that was built not long after Buddha died. And I just realize that it was all still somehow present there. We'd had a guide who was taking us around for several days, and he came to me and he said, "You look different." He said, "What's going on?" And I said, "Well, it's just, you know, it feels like, it feels special here." He said, "You know, you can take a tour of all the Buddhist places if you want. You can just hire a car." He said, "I will hire a car for you." I said, "Oh, no, I couldn't do that. I'm supposed to go out and into the fields with my husband." He said, "No, no, you must go, you must go." So he hired a Muslim driver who didn't know English, and he drove me all around India for 10 days. And I went all to all of the Parinirvana place and the teaching places and the... everywhere. Bodh Gaya. So if you have a chance, it's a wonderful thing to do. I don't know what's there. I mean, it's strange. Everything is in ruins. But Vulture Peak is still there. And of course, people have been going there for millennia, bringing their own practice to it. So it's infused with practice, you could say. Infused with awakeness and appreciation and respect. Very beautiful. I was very embarrassed when I finished. I was kind of ashamed of myself. I thought, "Oh, how did I not know this?" Cheeky Midwestern American ignoramus, I felt like. There was this whole world that opened up. It was wonderful.